going to pick right up where we were. We've been, in the last two talks, we've been examining something of personal interest to me, which is why the teachings of Jesus are sort of on a decline in this country, you know? And and you know, I grew up in the church, and it meant a lot to me. It still means a lot to me. And then I went away for 25 years, did the Buddhist thing, and then when I get back, something happened, you know? And it disturbs me that it seems about half the churches have closed in many areas, and synagogues as well. So, personally, I feel like that's a bad thing, and that they should be open, and people should have a choice. You know, it's like the Dalai Lama says, many flavors of ice cream, you know? So, like 31 flavors gives you 31 choices, and there should be many choices of paths, because different people will resonate with different paths. Like, she likes sherbet. She always wants to buy sherbet. The only place we can go in Bowie that's open normally is the 31 flavors, right, at the gas station. And she wants sherbet, and I want, like, chocolate mint chip, you know. And no matter how much we debate, it always ends up the same, you know. It's like, so you know what we do. We buy one cup and we put two scoops in one cup, you know, and then I try not to eat the sherbet, you know. But different strokes for different folks, you know. And, you know, how do we keep the traditions? I feel like Judaic Christian traditions are very valuable. How do we keep them strong? And then it becomes a question of how can we keep our own practice strong? Because it's the same question. And how do we keep our country strong, healthy, and how do we keep our whole culture strong and healthy? And so we proposed at the beginning that there were three ideals, three principal paths, they're called in Tibetan, Lam Kitsol Nam Sum in Tibetan. Three principal religious ideals that make a religion strong, and they make a person strong, and they make a country strong, and they make a planet strong, you know? So we've been through two of those paths. The first one is like just admitting that this world is broken. You know, as it stands, this world is not viable. Life as you were born with is not viable. It's not desirable to live a whole life, simply get old. You know, we call it in Tibetan, they say nangyal. Nangyal means internal contradiction. Like, it means, on the one hand, in our culture, you're expected to work hard, build up a family, build up a home, build up a career, build up financial means. And then on the other hand, there's this fact that you must lose it. You see, you must lose it. So on one hand, your culture is like encouraging you to work hard for certain objects. And then on the other hand, any honest person, in 3 minutes of reflection, realizes that you have to lose all of it. So there's a nangyal there. There's a dissonance or a contradiction there. On one hand, your culture is encouraging you to behave in a certain way. But on the other hand, it's obvious that it's hopeless. You see, so then there's a difficulty in behaving that way. You feel torn, you know, like I was in business. I was making about $600 an hour or something like that. But then what does it mean? You see, I mean, what does it mean ultimately to have a house? Or people commute into New York City, work their butts off all day so they can buy the house in New Jersey that they can't see because they're in New York working for it. So they get about, you know, 6 hours on a weekend to visit their home. And that's enough time to do your laundry and go to a dry cleaner, depending where you're at, you know? So what does that mean? You see, there's a dissonance there. There's a problem there. So it strikes you and you start coming to Dharma things, okay? Second one is, so first thing is to admit there's a problem. You know, just admit there's a problem. And then that we have to lose everything. And then the second one is love. Okay? The second principle is love. If a religion, if a people, if an individual in this lifetime doesn't master the art of love, then they're missing something. Then their life is not fulfilled. You see, the idea that we should take care of other people first, and that's how you take care of yourself. You see, that's not a nangya. That's not a contradiction. Taking care of other people is taking care of yourself. You see, I mean, you're not losing anything. There's no sacrifice involved because of karma. The more you take care of other people, the more you get what you want. So it's just a no-brainer. It's a win-win. They call it in business, right? It's a win-win. You win, they win, right? The only way you can get what you want is to take care of other people. If you take care of other people, you get what you want. Then everybody got what they wanted. You see? And it's just, we tend to make dualities. Either I get what I want or Chukila gets what she wants. You know, either she gets ice cream or I get ice cream. Either she gets sherbet. If I give up, if I keep buying the sherbet over and over, okay, halfway I've been doing it. No, then later we'll go to the gas station there and they'll be out of sherbet and all they have is mint chocolate chip. You see? No, that's not really it. But you end up with both. You see, everybody gets what they want. In one cup, there's both. And then the point is, you don't sacrifice anything. Love is the only way to make yourself happy also. You see? So that's the second great principle. And then we spoke yesterday that love doesn't end with things or even with hugs or even with attention, you know, even with sacrifice. Love extends to helping people get out of the big problems of life and helping people get ultimate happiness. So love extends not just to feeding people or giving them a place to stay, but if there is a way to stop suffering and death itself, if there is a way, then if you could give them that, that would be a different level of love. That would be a higher love. And if there was a way to do that on many worlds at the same time, you know, if that dream is possible, then to give someone that would be real love. That would be ultimate love. We call it ultimate love. Bodhicitta, if you want to call it that. Okay? Bodhicitta is not just being nice or being super nice. It's like, I want to become a holy being who can serve millions of people at one time and not limited to one planet or one body. You know, I'm not satisfied with one body or one planet. I want the big time. You know, that's bodhicitta. Bodhicitta has that, right? Two focuses. I want to help people. I want to reach that being so I can be that. Okay, so we finished that yesterday. Today we go on to the third ideal that, according to Buddhism, you need for a religion or an individual or a culture to be happy, to be complete. You need all three. Okay, so now on to the third one. And that's why Ken Rinpoche gave us this a week ago. Okay? why, I don't know. We're still thinking about it. But it's a pen. yeah. And when you write, it lights up. So anyway, I thought it might be confusing if I used that one. So I got just an easy, normal pen, okay. This is how we teach the third ideal. And you've heard it over and over. We say in the monastery, you need to hear it 3,000 hours, then you get it, okay. What is this? A pen, you know, so you're natural. I'm not trying to trick you. It's no trick question. I ask you, I've never done some stuff like that. And I say, what is this thing? And you say, it's a pen. And it's a pen. I can write with it. I have a piece of paper here. I'm writing on it. See, it's a red pen. And, you know, nobody can debate that it's a pen. Then if a dog came into this room, you know, if a puppy dog came into this room, and they jumped up on here, and I wave it like that to the dog, then they would, what? let me marry to it, right? Just naturally. Which means that they see it as what? They see it as something to chew on, right? You can call it a chew toy. Okay, just automatically. It's not like they think about it. Like, I wouldn't have handed out myself what it was. You didn't like, have to think, you know, and debate, you know. It's just a pen. So obviously to them, to a dog, it's not a pen. They don't see it as a pen. They see it, they might drool a little bit, and then they might start to chew on it. So one object is seen in two different ways. So which one is it really? I always get this both or neither. One guy, the famous guy in Florida who made the mistake and said, it's really a pen, you know. Yeah, you see, the really is wrong. The really is wrong. Really is wrong. It's not really a pen. And it's not really a chew toy either, okay? It's neither, or it's both, okay? You can say neither. By itself, it's neither. With the two people in the room, the dog and the human, it's both, you see? In the room, there's both going on. Okay, from its own side, it's neither. That's emptiness. Okay, like you hear all this stuff about emptiness. It's very confusing. I spent 10 years in the monastery banging my head on the wall. And then finally somebody explained it to me clearly. You know, like, that's all. That's the emptiness of a pen. Does it mean this pen is not here? No. Does it mean that you should close your eyes and think about black? No. Does it mean that you should stare at a wall and pray like day after day until something happens? No. Does it mean that you should just listen to your thoughts wandering through your mind and not attach to them? No. All it means is that this thing is not a pen by itself, from its own side. It's empty of that. It's devoid of that. The word emptiness means devoid. Doesn't have that. This doesn't have pen-ness. Okay? This object doesn't have pen-ness. That's its emptiness. Okay? Neither does it have chew toy-ness. Okay? Right? Not from its own side. If it did, you'd all be slobbering right now. You know, like that. You know, you think, wow, if I can get a hold of that pen during the break, you know. I mean, you know. No. It says, chew toy-ness and pen-ness don't belong to this thing, okay? And that's all that emptiness means. It's available to be either one, okay? The world is available to you. The world is available. In the business books, we call it available. In the Buddhist books, we call it emptiness, okay? It's just, doesn't matter what you call it. It's available. It's like a blank wall that you can project things onto, okay? So, in the Melinda Paha, in the questions of Melinda, this is a very powerful teaching, and this is the most important thing in the whole book. Okay, so Krishnadas is going to do that. How does Nagasena teach this to Melinda? Okay, here we go.
So, Nagasena is talking to Melinda, and Melinda says, you know, holy teacher, how should I refer to you? How should I call you? And then this beautiful Indian sage launches into this huge teaching on emptiness about the name Nagasena. Yeah. First, I'm supposed to tell you what the name Nagasena means. If the projector gets plugged in. Well, I can talk without the projector. Naga, it's like close to snake in the English word. And we see that in the word Nagarjuna, too, the name Nagarjuna. The Nagas were supposed to be... I can do that. Thanks. Say Nagasena.
Nagasena.
So, The Nagas are supposed to be these spirit beings that live near water. And Sena is like army or an armed forces. Like in India, they had their elephant forces and they had their cavalry forces and they had their footmen. They had like four different kinds of armed forces, and this is talking about the forces of these Nagas or spiritual beings, and that's what his name means. And he says to Melinda, you know, I could just as well have been called something totally different, you know, and the name that has been applied to me is just a name. It doesn't, it's not connected to me, you know, it's not, it's like the word pen. This is not a pen in and of itself. And Nagasena is not Nagasena in and of himself. You know, it's a little bit harder when you relate it to an actual person. It's like looking at Geshe Michael and realizing that the label that we give to Geshe Michael, our spiritual teacher, is not coming from himself. And the images that we place upon this spiritual teacher, it's not coming from the teacher in and of themselves. It's coming from a projection from our own minds. So if we have the karma to see a holy spiritual being and a holy spiritual teacher in front of us, it's because of our own seeds. You know, Nagasena and Geshe Michael are not out there from their own side. And that's what Nagasena launches into when he talks about the emptiness of his name. You know? And that's the emptiness of the person. And then he goes on and he says, so King Melinda, how did you get here today? How did you come visit me? And he's like, well, I took my chariot. And then Master Nagasena launches off into this really famous explanation about the emptiness of the parts of a person, using that famous explanation of the chariot and the chariot's parts that we've had. Some of you who have studied the ACI courses have had it before. I think it was in course 12. And it's in the Prajna, the Perfection of Wisdom Sutras. But he says, and we'll do it with car, you know. It's, well, King Melinda, are the tires the car? And he's like, no. And he's like, well, is the hood the car? He's like, no. So is the trunk the car? No. You know, is the frame, the metal frame inside the car? No. Is the engine the car? No. Well, are all the things put together a car? And that's the tricky one, right? Because you would want to say yes. Are all the things put together the car? Yeah, some people know the answer already, but it's not until your mind puts them all together and forms the mental image of the word car. All those disparate parts, you know? All those disparate parts of the tire and the engine and the frame and the doors and the trunk. And you take them all together and the mind just says, that's a car. How do we do that? How does our mind do that? We're going to get that in the second part of the class. Why the mind superimposes car on these disparate parts that don't necessarily shout car to you. Like, there's nothing in those parts in anybody's car out on the street that is shouting car in and of itself. But so we look at it and we don't have to think about it and it just says car to us. There's something that our mind is doing that's overlaying an image, a mental picture of a car onto those parts. And then that's how Master Nagasena introduces the emptiness of the parts of a person. And we can do that the same, you know, when you take a person and its parts, you can also do the same with yourself and your own body, you know? Like, you have a conception of you as yourself as a person. Like, I have a conception of myself. This is Christy, and I consider Christy like my body and my mind, you know? And then I can take each separate part of myself and say, you know, does my hand say, you know, Christy in and of itself? No, actually no parts of my body shout Christi, you know? No part in and of itself is identified as me. I'm overlaying that on these disparate parts. And that's the emptiness teaching that Master Nagasena gives to us in the reading. Interestingly enough, the word for chariot is Shingta in Tibetan.
Just spell this right.
And what the name of this whole teaching that we're giving this weekend? Is Shingte Sulje. Say Shingte Sulje.
Shingte
Sulje. Shing means wooden and Ta means horse. And that's what they called a chariot in those days. And it's just up. Sul literally means like a custom. And Jay just means to split open, the existing customs. And this is the idea of a great innovator. You know, a Shingte Sulje is a great innovator. And there are two or maybe three great innovators in the past, in history, in this tradition. You know, it's Arya Nagarjuna and Master Asanga and Jetsun Kapa. And some people debate whether Jetsun Kapa was a great innovator. And these are people who totally shook the very foundations of the existing customs. They just completely turned the world upside down for the people in that culture. You know? And the idea of emptiness is something that could really turn our culture upside down. Really shake the foundations and rock the world of our existing culture. I mean, imagine if we had imbued this kind of emptiness teaching into the existing culture and existing religions of our day. What would happen? Like, what would we be doing in a political situation if everybody understood that the only way to get violence to come to you was to be violent to somebody? If everybody understood that, how would we react? You know? It would shake the very foundations of our culture. It would completely transform every decision that everybody makes throughout the day. And Geshe-la's going to talk more about it.
I want to emphasize that this idea of emptiness, it's practical, okay? It's not some kind of pie-in-the-sky thing. It's not like you space out and you say, everything's an illusion, nothing matters, I could be nice, I could be bad, nothing matters. That's a very, very bad thought. That's a very, very wrong thought, okay? Emptiness, if you understand emptiness clearly, during the tour, I don't know who saw, we played the Matrix. We played the opening scene, but there's a scene in the Matrix. Early on in the Matrix, we didn't see this, right? We were in three retreat. We got out, we saw like 500 movies in a row. And this one was particularly cool, the Matrix, right? And in the beginning of the movie, before he figures out that the world is a computer program, he's fighting the guys in the ground. There's all these pillars in this place, and he's doing cartwheels, very graceful cartwheels, and they're machine gunning, and he just happens to go through all the bullets, and you know, he has to dodge the bullets, right? Then towards the end of the movie, at the very end, he figures out reality. He figures out the matrix, you know. Then he walks into a corridor and there's three guys are shooting at him, the guys in suits, right? And they're choo, choo, choo. And then instead of dodging and doing cartwheels, he does this, we did this thing, right? He just does this thing, you know. He reaches into the matrix and he makes an adjustment in the program, you know, like this. And then the bullets just, they stop in midair, and then he's like, picks one out of midair and looks at it and drops it. And then they all drop on the floor. And you see, he figured out the matrix. Like he turned some bits in the program. He switched a switch in reality. And if you understand emptiness, if you understand this thing, you can turn switches in reality. You see, you can adjust reality. That's the cool thing. So people say, prove it, you know. And I did, okay. And I'm not, they're called Jigme, right? Her name is Jigme. Her nun's name is Jigme. That was Naropa's name. That was his monk's name. Abhaya. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid to say, I'm Abhaya, I'm Jigme. You're Jigme. But anyway, I'm not afraid to say, yeah, you can use it, you see. So we started a small business. We had a table not much bigger than that top of that thing. We had three people sitting around. We had like 14 little diamonds that we kept looking at all day because there wasn't any else. You weren't even there. She came later. But I used this thing, you know? We used this thing. And now it's like the largest diamond business in America. It's jewelry.com. You can check it out. It's $250 million a year. And it works, you know? It just flatly works. You can adjust reality. You can reach into reality and turn a switch if you know how. It's all because of this thing. It's all based on the pen thing. If you really get the pen thing, you can make things happen. You see, you can be like Neo in the Matrix. You can reach in calmly, gently, happily, without a lot of sweat. I worked only 4 days a week, okay? And one day a week, 3 days a week, I was like studying how to do it, right? And then you just reach in and you turn a switch, you see? And I did it with my body, okay? I had gout. My father had gout. It's a hereditary disease. There were days I couldn't walk. Like, I had to lay in bed. One very bad day, I was on retreat in Flagstaff by myself. And it got so bad, I couldn't get out of bed. I had to poop in the bed. I couldn't get up to poop, you know. It hurt so bad. And there was nobody else to take care of me, you know. And so then I just worked on it. You know, I asked lamas, how do you do this one? You know, oh, they said, just do switch this, switch this, switch this. And then just for fun, we do ballet now, you know, on that foot. I couldn't walk on that foot, you know. And now we do ballet. We're not really good, but it's a lot better than gout, right? And frankly, you can use it for yoga. You can use it for anything. If you understand this third principle, you see, which is new to our culture. So those are hard. New ideas banging into your culture. That's really hard. To have a really original idea is extremely rare because your culture's not ready for it, right? Like, people aren't ready to go around hearing about how this pen thing can make you rich and healthy. You know what I mean? People aren't ready. They don't get it. They're not. It's not comfortable in our culture because we don't have that. And it's the things that we don't have that are the most used to us. You see, Prometheus brings what?
Fire.
People never thought of fire, you know? Like, this is this Greek myth, you know? Prometheus looking down, oh, these poor humans, they don't have fire. Can I take them some fire? No. The other gods are like, no, that's our stuff, you know? And he like sneaks out one day and he takes fire to the humans and gives fire to humans, you know? That's the idea of Shingde Soje. Shingda means nobody knew about the wheel. You see? Nobody figured out that with four wheels you can carry a lot more stuff than with your arms. You know? So Shingde Soje means somebody who introduces the wheel to a new culture. So you see where we're getting to. I want you to be Shingde Soje. You know? So far in history, there's only been two confirmed ones. You know, Nagarjuna and Asanga, Master. And then in Tibet, they say, we got our own Shingde Soje. We got Tsongkhapa. You know? He brought the wheel to Tibet. You know? He brought this new invention that saved everyone. It's like the web or the personal computer. If you ever typed a manuscript three times back in 1979, you know, on those plastic sheets, And if you make one mistake, you have to throw it out. I did art in Rinpoche's first book, Nagarjuna's Letter, 3 times, 150 pages. Every time you make a mistake, you have to throw it out. That was before computers, you know. So somebody, Bill Gates, is a Shingde Soje. Okay, no kidding. And the guy who invented the web is a Shingde Soje. Because just one small thing, and it makes all of our lives easier, you see. It's like a... So I want you to do that with these three ideas. You see, that's what Diamond Mountain University is all about. It's like you train there. You get it straight. It takes 5-6 years. I'm sorry. You can't get it in 6 months. You can't get it in 3 talks. It takes 5-6 years. You come. You work hard. It's like 5 weeks, 3 times a year, okay? And we load you, you know, like a computer. We load you. And it takes time. You have to learn the ancient sources. You have to meditate. You have to do retreats. You have to debate. You have to question things. And then over a period of time, you become a Shingde Soje. That's the whole point. This weekend is supposed to be a grand celebration, and we're opening this thing after like 5-10 years of work. And the idea is to make a bunch of Shingde Sojes, you know, and then send them out to give people fire or to give people a personal computer or the wheel. You see what I mean? Something new that could make people's lives richer. You know, what if everybody did this pen thing? Would everybody get rich? Yeah. There's no limit to money. You see? That's important. Money is a mental projection. Wealth is a mental projection. Health is a mental projection. What, everybody can't think of more money? You see, it's not true that there are limited resources in the world. That's not true. Everything is coming from the mind. We said tennis doesn't come from this thing, right? If it did, the dog would pick it up and write a love letter to the doggy girlfriend. You know, your tail is like so good, you know. Okay? No, I mean, or if chew toyness were coming from it, you would be salivating now, okay? So where is the penness coming from? If it's not coming from this object, where is it coming from? If you think about it, it must be coming from your mind. Okay? It's not coming from this thing. If it was coming from this, the dog would ride a ladder. If it was coming from this, you'd be slobbering. It must be coming from somewhere else. Pen is coming from you. Okay? Pen is coming from you. Does that mean it's not real? I always say, if you think this is an illusion, maya, you know, if you think Buddhism is teaching you or Hinduism about illusion, come up and get your illusory mustache. You know, I'll give you one. No one has ever come up. Okay? No, I'll give you Hitler one or Saddam Hussein one, whatever your generation. Okay? I'll give you whichever one you want. You know what I mean? And no one ever, because it works. Okay? Is it coming from your mind? Does it work? Okay? No nungal, no problem there. No problem there. It is coming from your mind. It is real. Okay? It is real. Let me think. We're going to tell you why it comes from your mind after the break. Okay? But since we have a little time and you're not exhausted yet, I think I'll do a little history. Okay? Is that right? Yeah. So we'll go on to this. I think you have this, let's wrap up a little, let's just recoup where we are. So Alexander has come to India. You know, he has planted a bunch of cities there, and all the way on the route back and forth. And then all those Greek kings down to Melinda have come into India, and there's been this big cultural crash between two ideas, right? The world of the Greeks and the world of the Indians. And then there's been this melding of the two cultures. Do you get the point? The point is, Tibet has crashed into our culture like an iceberg, you know? And India, yoga teachings. You know, 10 years ago, nobody was doing yoga. I saw a poll the other day. 100 million people have tried yoga in this country. It's a huge, an idea, you see? Are we peddling diamonds? Are we peddling... food? Or are we trying to sell cars? We're selling ideas. You see? Very powerful medicine, you know? When an idea hits your country, big things happen, you know, big. And ideas are cheap. You know, ideas you can write on a little paper. You can think of an idea, you see? You can carry them around in your head, right? So we're talking about how do ideas come into a new culture. We've been investigating how did we get our ideas? Okay? Like we said, we were pretty bad on the idea of life being a broken thing. You know, we really want a new car. We really want a new house. We really want to have 14 kinds of spaghetti or 230 kinds of hair conditioner in the market. We need that. We've been sold a bad idea, and that makes us unhappy. Okay? So how do we clean out ideas? Well, you got to look at how ideas got into your country. How did those ideas sneak in to our culture? Because we want to get them out of our culture. You know, we want to live simply. We want to learn to live in a mud hut with solar energy and comfortable, happy, and leave something for our children and not just eat all their food. You see, we are destroying the livelihood of our children. You see, we are not only being pigs globally, we're using up 90% of the world's stuff. We're raping the world for our children. They won't have anything. Would you sit around dinner, Thanksgiving dinner, all the kids are there, and you say, you can't have anything. I'm getting all the pumpkin pie because I need 230 kinds of hair conditioner. Okay? No, we're doing that. We do that. See, that idea has infected our minds, and we're just not thinking about the other people at the table. And you will notice it when it comes back. When China needs more oil than the United States, which is about to happen, which is on the verge of happening, that's why oil prices are up. When China's capacity for industrial production exceeds the United States capacity, you will see something happen. You'll be on the other side of the table. And they'll be saying, why should I worry about you? We work harder than you. You don't get anything to eat today. You see, I mean, it will happen. You're very naive to think it's not happening. It is happening because of karma. Because we've been hogging everyone. So anyway, learn to live simply. That idea, we're trying to, and not deprive yourself, okay? Not deprive you. You just don't need 230 kinds of shampoo, okay? It's just stuff you didn't need anyway. They sold it to you. They sold you this idea. You've been brainwashed. We're trying to unbrainwash, right? So anyway, those are ideas that, how did we get the good ideas in our culture? So we're going to look at that, okay? So we left those Greek kings in India, and then Alexander and the yogi started off home. They're supposed to be going home because the troops have voted to go home. And they get as far, halfway to Babylon, and the yogi says, I'm going to die. And then he dies. But before he dies, what's he say to Alexander? See you in Babylon. See you in Babylon, you know. No, and then Alexander gets to Babylon, and in 2 days he dies. Okay, he just suddenly dies. We don't know why. People speculate that he was poisoned. We don't know. But anyway, he dies. So immediately the empire freezes. He's 32 years old. He didn't appoint anybody. Okay? And Athens declares independence from him. And then every general, wherever he was sitting, becomes the king of that country. Okay? So Ptolemy in Egypt and people like Chandragupta in India, 10 years later, they become the kings wherever they are. Wherever they were when he died in Babylon, everybody becomes the king automatically. Now, cool stuff happens in Ptolemy's region. Okay? He's like in charge of Egypt and what we now call the Middle East, right? And they begin to take an interest in the Jewish people, the Hebrew people. And they notice that these Jewish scholars have these extraordinary books, the Old Testament, okay? So the Greek kings of Egypt and Palestine, they come to the Jews in Jerusalem and they say, could we learn that? You know, could we learn what you know? You know, and this is a very cool thing. Up to just before that, the Jews have been kept in captivity in Babylon. Okay, like they were, they keep getting enslaved. Okay, ever since they started, I wanted to put it on the timeline: 500 years, 800 years before Lord Buddha, 1300 BC. There's this guy Moses. Okay, this is 800 years before Lord Buddha. Okay, I didn't even put it on the sheet because it wouldn't fit. That sheet was supposed to be proportionate, like every 100 years is a quarter inch or something. So it would have been like three more sheets to put Moses on there. Okay? No, like Moses just came a long time before. And then Moses introduces these ideas. You know, Moses either given or whatever, these great ideas called the Ten Commandments. Okay? The Ten Commandments. And we have them in your reading. Someone did them for us in Hebrew. It's a little bit... I don't know Hebrew, so anyway, we'll check it. 800 years before Lord Buddha, Moses wandering in the desert or coming out of Egypt, he's got these Ten Commandments, okay? And then what's beautiful is that these Greek kings who had the foresight to ask the yogis and the Buddhist monks, what do you think? You know, tell us, teach us what you know. These guys are also interested in the teaching of the Jews, you know. So they come to Jerusalem. They say, how about we translate the Bible, your Bible, into Greek, you know. Because we want to know, it sounds cool, you know. And they really take a liking to each other, the Greeks and the Jewish people. They begin to take a real liking to each other. So in the temple in Jerusalem, the Jews agreed to put a statue of Zeus. Okay, and in those days there was a statue of Zeus sitting in the temple in the Jerusalem. Why was the temple built in Jerusalem? To house the Ark of the Covenant. What's that? It's a big box and it's got the Ten Commandments in it. Okay, and they've been wandering around the desert for years carrying this box around with the Ten Commandments in it. Okay, the tablets, the tablets of the Ten Commandments. So they build this big temple. And the Greeks are like fascinated by it, and they say, teach us this. So they go to Alexandria. There's a big debate among the Jewish elders. Some people say, we don't want this Greek thing. And then some people say, let's join. If you can't beat them, join them. Let's combine forces with the Greeks, you know. And they're very attracted to the Greeks' idea of cities and democracy and philosophy. Some of the elders are attracted. So anyway, they decide to send some young men to Alexandria in Egypt. They say, we'll translate the Bible for you into Greek. So they do, and it's called the Septuagint, which means the 70. Because it took 70 translators to finish that translation. So anyway, you get these ideas of the Jewish people begin to spread among the Greeks. Okay, and after they are liberated from Babylon, begins the first diaspora of the Jews. They're not allowed all, they don't all allowed to go back to Jerusalem. In fact, for a while, no Jew was allowed to go to Jerusalem. So they had to go settle in other countries. Okay, and if you look at the map you have, okay, there, can we put it on there? The Jews in the this is what the first diaspora looked like. Okay, before the Romans got to the Jews, which is a whole other story, okay? But this is as they were released from Babylon by the Persian emperor, they went to the Greek cities. So they spread to all these different cities, okay? Why is that important for us? We're talking about ideas coming into a culture. What's this old history stuff got to do with us, okay? It's this. In 1 AD, what happens? Yeah, Jesus is born, okay? In 1 AD, Jesus is born. And then the Jews, he's a Jew. And they start to, some people in the Jewish community get interested. They're like, I like your teaching. That's kind of cool. You know, and then he's killed. And then after that, his disciples are pretty much, they can't stay in Jerusalem. It's a little hot there, okay? And they start to spread out. And there was a rule in those days that in a synagogue, in a Jewish synagogue, any person could get up during the service and give a talk. You know, like everyone had the right in a synagogue to get up and give a talk. So these Jews go out with these ideas to all the synagogues of the Greek cities. And that's why Christianity spread. Okay? Like, if it hadn't been, what do you call it? When you don't allow someone to do their religion, suppressed, or what's the harder word? Persecuted, yeah. By the persecution, they are forced to travel from city to city. So they naturally go to the synagogues to pray. And then when time comes to get up and talk, they get up and they say, I saw this guy back in Jerusalem, you know, and he had these ideas that we should treat each other as a, you know. And then the ideas begin to spread. That's how people always ask, why did Christianity spread so fast? It was because of the system that all these cities already had venues ready, gigs, places for gigs, okay? No, like when we went on tour, we had to go ask Barnes and Nobles and, you know, we had to do all this stuff. There are gigs, places for gigs to happen, already set up. You know, hundreds of cities already have major synagogues. So that's why it just took off like that. You know, they were standing out in all of those places. Then later, I mean, this is kind of boring, I'll stop, okay? The left side of this map, the Roman Empire starts. And just before Jesus, okay, by 30 BC, they take over Greece. Okay, they have taken over Greece and the Middle East. So Pontius Pilate was a Roman administrator of Palestine. And so they've taken over that. They say leave the... They also have most of the territory towards India. They weren't as interested, but there was a lot of contact. There was a lot of ideas coming back and forth. Thomas, the apostle, after Jesus is killed, he goes to Taxila. Which I don't... It's on your other map. But anyway, Taxila is the great Buddhist university in Indian territory. Okay, so he's invited there. I had to write it down by a guy named Gando Fares. Okay, who's known in that's his Greek name, right? In Latin, he's known as Gaspar, and this is one of the three kings who see the star in the west and come to greet the child. So he has been already to Bethlehem to see the child. You see, he's gone from Taxila with two other kings to see the child in Bethlehem. Then he comes home, and it, you know, he makes contact. And then after Jesus' death, Thomas goes to Taxila, and he builds a temple for one of the three kings. And then he travels throughout India and teaches Christianity. And he dies in Madras, Chennai. So it's a very cool story. You can see how ideas have come back and forth, okay? Ideas, great ideas. You can see from the Melinda scripture how ideas have come to the West. Some ideas got here strong, like love, okay? Love. Shantideva calls it Dakshin Nyamje, right? People should be treated equally. That idea comes into Greece strong, firmly planted, democracy is invented. It takes root in Europe and in America. You know, our democracy, the idea, okay, not the practice, okay? The idea, it's not perfect, but it's never existed like that. I mean, it's really cool. The idea that everybody has equal rights, the idea that every person is equal, that's totally new in the world. And it comes from, it spreads out throughout the world because of those Greek kings and the Indians, you see? It's very interesting. It comes into our culture that way. The idea that you should live simply and not take away from the other people at the table, and especially not from your children and your children's children, that idea reaches here, Jesus talks about it, and it aborts. And there's an abortion. I mean, it fails. It fails. In America, materialism takes over, and we spread that poison throughout the world. I was in India, you know, I was working in India, diamond business, Bombay. And suddenly, I noticed a big change in the workers' habits. You know, they're all coming to work like yawning, you know, and they're all like, they can't work past 3 p.m. You know, I'm like, what's going on here, you know? Did you go to the temple in the morning? They said, well, that's not what made me tired. Actually, I'm not going to temple in the morning anymore. And I'm like, but you always used to go to temple in the morning. Jane, right? Jane Temple. And I said, yeah, I used to go to temple. But last week, the Americans started beaming down this Star TV thing. You know, and now we got movies. Now we got on-demand movies, you know. And so I haven't had time to go to temple this week. And actually, I didn't get any sleep last night because Star TV beamed down two movies last night. You know, and then we sort of exported our... We exported this worthless thing, you see what I mean? And then some traditional, beautiful thing, going to temple before work. They go for a swim and then they go to temple. and they meditate, and then they come to work. So they don't do that anymore. At least at the office that I worked at, they don't do that anymore. Because we sent that idea. See, that idea didn't take root in our culture. Okay, so now we have two ideas. One idea, live simply, allow other people to eat at the table. Fail. Somewhere it failed in our culture. And in our religions. And I suggest maybe that's why our religions are not so strong. And then secondly, love, treat people equally. That got planted here and it's strong. It's so strong you don't even know. You didn't even notice it. You don't even notice that we have this principle that, you know, you don't go to the police station and say, somebody hit me, and they say, well, give me $50 and I'll do something about it. You know what I mean? We believe that you have equal right, right? So what about this third idea, like emptiness, the idea that you could adjust your reality? You see, not here. It's not here. Melinda got it. You see, Melinda got the teaching of the chariot, right? Melinda got it. And the trade routes were open. And it went through Palestine, and it got here. But somewhere it failed. Somewhere it failed. Somewhere along the way it failed. Okay, we're going to talk about why and how to fix it, maybe, after the break. Okay, so I think we'll have... Oh, one thing before the break. I was going to ask three people to get up and just talk about... These are three projects we're working on. We're doing this thing to bore you. No, I mean... In case you hear something that sounds interesting to you, then meet the person during the break and say, I'd like to try to do what you're doing, okay? And actually, there were four people I had in mind, but one of them, Eliana, where's Eliana? Yeah. Stand up, okay? Eliana's working on a project. Do you have the film stuff with you? No. Okay. No. Okay. During the break... Eliana's working on children's education. She's a professional school teacher from Lake Tahoe. And she has successfully integrated a lot of great ideas with the approval of the school board. And they're not presented as religious ideas. She's successfully done it. She's pulled it off on a grassroots level. So I ask you to see her during the break. If you're interested in children's education and DMU, and how to get ideas into the schools and teaching children, then talk to Eliana during the break, okay? Then I have large things going on, like thousands of people into it. So I wanted to introduce those three guys. One is Asian Classics Institute. They provide courses for, well, I just heard they had 180,000 downloads in the last 3 months. From their website, so, and they have centers. So I wanted to introduce the president of that, which is Chelsea Bailey. Come. I'd like to ask you to do one thing during your presentation. She doesn't know this. Very unusual. And Eliana didn't know you, sorry. But... just to you have the list of the directors? And if you could just ask them to stand up, who are here. Or if someone could give you that list. Okay, okay. Okay. She said, I just thought it would be cool. We have some of the directors of the ACI groups around the world are here. And I just thought if they stood up and you come from Anchorage, Alaska, and the Anchorage, Alaska director stands out, then you know who to talk to during the break. Okay, so hang on. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Okay. Hi. If you're interested in studying these ideas more deeply, Geshe Michael, along with John Stilwell, developed the Asian Classics Institute. And the Asian Classics Institute provides you the opportunity to study these ideas in depth, very completely, very sweetly, in a way that's structured so that you will learn it. Very much in the way if you're doing you've been doing the yoga class, quizzes, homeworks, final exams, ways that we as Americans who have gone to universities and public schools have learned to process knowledge. So it's a really beautiful way to learn this material. We have lots of ways to get this to you. One of the ways is that you can come to New York. And there are beautiful teachers there who are teaching these courses. You can go to, there are people in other cities who are teaching these courses, and I'm hoping my list is complete still. And people will wave if you're not on my, if I've lost your piece of paper. And also, we have these courses on the web, and you can do them by correspondence. So one way to do them is download them, and that's when we talk about 100, and I think it was 175,000 downloads, that's what people are downloading. They're doing these at home all over the world. It's really beautiful and amazing. And then you mail them to us, and we grade them, and you get feedback on them, and you get to go through it and complete the courses and have teachers work with you in that way. You can also have the course materials mailed to you. And if you either attend the courses or have them mailed to you, you will get this information. This is the Diamond Cutter course, which is tonight's topic, emptiness. So there are 15 courses and 3 review courses. The first course is the 3 principal paths. So if you want to start there, you can have a deeper understanding of this. All right, I am going to look through my list. You have to give me 1 second. I apologize. Okay. John, Miki, from North Carolina. If you are anywhere near North Carolina, find John.
Yes.
Is Bonnie Baptiste here? Baptiste here? From Austin. So if you're anywhere near Austin, and I'm going to tell you another way to keep this information. You don't have to remember everything I say. I'm going to tell you another way to get to this information. There is a group in Chicago, and the primary person is John Roadhouse. But is Kevin? It's Kevin, right? Yeah. Is Kevin here? Kevin. there are. I actually had the honor to buy Krispy Kreme donuts for a Geshe Michael event. there are a couple of centers in Ohio, and I think is Holly here? Is Holly Johnson here? She was. Is somebody else here from Ohio? Okay, I'm sorry, tell me your names again. Evan and Douglas are here from Ohio. Bonnie Moore and Michael Moore, I know that Bonnie's here. Bonnie and Michael also coordinate all the grading if you're doing correspondence courses, as well as sending out the course materials. So we owe them a tremendous debt. There are people in Florida who are not here. Is anybody here from Florida who's working with the Florida groups? Okay. Bonnie Jones is not here, right? He's in Houston, and you can find him. I'm just going to say, I want to say the names of the places, so even if the people aren't here. Indiana, I know that my karmic brothers and sisters in Indiana are there, and that's Clifton and Julie. Yay. I know that Brian and Smith and Lauren Benjamin are both here from L.A. Jeffrey Brooks from Massachusetts. He's not here. So if you're in the Upper East, he's there. There is a group from Orange County. Are Jonah and Jackie Brown here? Nope. So if you can't get up to L.A. because of the traffic, you can go to Orange County. Gary and Candy Hirsch are in Olympia, and I'm going to get it right this time. Ken Sandvik is not here, and he's in San Jose. Pat Wells is in Santa Cruz, which is where I want to go. Susan Stump and George Schneider and Livingston Sutro are... And for those of you who are not big, huge fans of theirs yet, they're in Sierra Vista, so they're very close by. David Fishman and Brandy and Brian Stickler and Crystal Park, all from South Lake Tahoe. And if I could go there too, I would. So. Is Pilar Tumulo here from Idaho? Okay, I just want to go on vacation, and like I want to go study in all these beautiful places. So there's so if you're from there, Jim and Allison Day, and they coordinate a study group here in Tucson, a few blocks away. So I would run to them at the break, and they're going to have to get a bigger space after this, I think. Stephanie Loebs from Williamsburg, Virginia. Robin's here. Where's Robin? Robbie? Oh, Robbie. I'm losing my place. Okay. There's a study group in Berlin. And they're not here, but I feel like I'm on a worldwide tour here. Keith Horan, Kevin, and Miriam Thornton are in Ireland. And Michael Dunn and Ronnie, is it Ronnie Dunn are in Dublin. Devora, who, I don't know if we introduced Devora. She left this morning, yeah. So Devora is doing work in Israel, and we will find you ways to hook up with her. Also, I know that Devora needs some help with something, and I'm wondering if I could let people know about that. Devora, she's been funding all her own trips to Israel, and she... It would be really nice if she had funding from a foundation to help her with this. She does not have time because of her amazing, busy teaching schedule to be able to do that research. If there is someone, and it doesn't matter where you are, who could spend some time speaking to Devora about what she's doing and learning more about it, and then doing some foundation research to help her fund this amazing, amazing work that she's doing to teach these three principal paths in Israel, to bring them there and to have people spread the idea of creating peace in this very troubled place, it would be a very beautiful service. So you can speak to me about that. Devora doesn't know I'm doing this. So I'd really like to help her with that. But she also needs help finding... Yes. She needs lots of...
She teaches by camera in three cities in Israel twice a week. And then she goes every 6 months and spends like 3 months there. So she's like...
Yeah. And she's out of frequent flyer miles. Which is evidently very difficult to accrue enough to go to Israel. Anthony Deeg is in Melbourne. And Anthony is not here.
Not here.
Okay. I'm not going to be able to say the same old people's names. Do you know?
Dr. Ho.
Dr. Ho is in Singapore. Mark Joseph and Martin Christensen are in South Africa, in Johannesburg.
And we have
There is a
Oh.
You're here.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Oh,
good. Yeah. Another really important place. Okay, there is a group in Mallorca, Spain. Isidoro Gordi.
Isidro.
And Venerable Kisom, who's in Toronto. Yeah. And Sid Johnson and Estelle Seguin. And I learned the other day that they just have bought. There is some amazing property that is being developed up in British Columbia, and it's another place I want to go.
I think that might be it, my list, but I don't know.
Giselle. It's just because I'm missing. I've been taking notes on the back of my list. Giselle is here from Australia, and please stand up, please. Salim Lee in Perth, Australia. And Jakarta. I don't know if you heard me say he's also in Jakarta as well.
Yeah.
Is there anybody else? And I apologize, it's just a list issue. John McCluskey.
We didn't hear the town for John.
Where's John?
Where are you, John? Where are you, John?
Oh, I'm sorry, Kennebunk, Maine.
Kennebunk, Maine. Oh, good,
another
good.
Another vacation spot.
There's also, I also met someone from San Francisco who is just starting a group.
Yeah.
Yes.
Denver, Roadhouses.
Young
Roadhouses.
Kelly Roadhouse.
Kelly Roadhouse from
Denver.
Denver. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have a study group in Southeastern VA too here in Philadelphia.
Oh. Yeah, that's great.
Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, Winston is in Portland, Oregon. And north of the city, an hour and a half north of the city, New York. When I lived in San Francisco, it was...
I thought that was
the city. No, not Bowie. When I lived in San Francisco, it was the city. Now New York is the city. An hour and a half north is a beautiful retreat center called Godso Retreat Center. It's in Reading, Connecticut. And so if you're up there, you know, you're already living in a beautiful place, but it's an exceptional site for study and retreat.
Rob Ho.
And Nancy Karen is the president of the board at the Three Jewels. Don't clap yet because you got to hear what it is. The Three Jewels is an outreach and study center in New York City. A beautiful, beautiful space. Is there anybody else who's secretly studying and wants to share that, wants a bigger group? Okay, I apologize for the list that I lost, or that I've misplaced. So,
Philadelphia.
Oh, you're holding out. Please stand up. So what's your name, please?
My name is Floss, and Will and I have been trying to get Philadelphia on the map
for study. So if anyone knows anyone who's near Philadelphia, have them contact me or Will. And I've been trying to get on the list. I keep emailing it, and it never gets the list. So I guess I have to stand up and say Philadelphia.
Yay! And I'm going to tell you now, if you didn't write those people's names down, if you don't remember what they look like, if you've already forgotten their name, if you lost your list, I'm going to give you a website that you can... I'm going to give you actually my email address. I'm going to give you the website. I want to give people my email address because I want you to be able to talk to somebody. I want you to have a person get back to you. And yeah, so I'm going to do that. So, first, if you just want to go to the website, there's actually, I'm going to give you two different web addresses. They both will get you to the same place, but one will get you more places.
Can I make an announcement while you're writing?
Please.
While she's writing, I'm going to make another announcement because we're going to run out of time today. His Holiness the Dalai Lama has assented to come to Tucson. He'll be teaching the same subject that we just did in New York, which is basically overcoming selfishness, okay? And it's a very famous teaching, very great teaching. He'll be doing that a year from this month. And optimistically, we just... Because it's a very small venue, we demanded 200 tickets, and we got them. But they're gonna go fast, okay? But we didn't pay for them yet. So, yeah. And I think the organizers would appreciate it if we just paid for them. Venerable Chikila is the ticket master, and I need like 10, okay? Just to tell you. but talk to her if you need tickets. It's getting hard to get tickets already. In Vancouver, it was scheduled for a 5,000 seat place, and it sold out in 45 minutes. And then they moved it to the hockey stadium, 15,000 seats. Was that right, Sid? Yeah, and then it sold out like 3 days. So, you know, as soon as it gets public, it's going to be a problem because there's only 2,000 seats. And we begged them to get a bigger place, and I don't think they can. So, okay. Yeah.
Maybe you have the Roots campus as well. There are a number of people in LA who have been asking if we are going to buy a big group. Is this something that I can tell them yes and to contact you?
Yeah. We kind of thought it'd be cool to show up as a block, you know? Yeah. Yeah. Talk to her. First come, first serve. Okay. Yeah. It's what? Oh. Well, apparently DMU students get first crack, but I think that'll be enough for them too. But get it going. Okay.
Get another block of
food. I'm not sure available, but we'll try. Okay. Is that?
Those are the addresses, but I wanted to say there's one other place that these first 18 courses are being taught. It's a new university. It's called Diamond Mountain University. It's really close by. And then you can go, you can take other beautiful courses there as well. So thank you very much.
Also, a lot of them are sent to prisons. Hundreds and hundreds of courses are sent to prisons. So if you know people in prison or you want to talk to someone about that, Bonnie Moore. We send a very large amount of courses to prisoners, and then they get personal letters back with their homework, and they really like it. So, if you know anybody in prison or you're working with prisons, that's one thing you can do. One more, and then one or two more. We have an institute that provides business services to businesses to make them more ethical and more profitable, because they go together. So I'd like to introduce Gary Hirsch. Gary and Candy Hirsch are the president and vice president.
Hello.
So why business? You know, how does it fit? How does a company that actually charges money for things and makes a profit and pays taxes fit in this whole scenario? We do charge money, and I want you to know up front that we, too, give it away. We don't give it all away. People who work for us get paid for what they do. We give a little bit to ACIP. We used to give money to Geshe-la and Christie, but with all due respect, they just don't know how to hang on to money. And so really, I mean, you know, part of the reason is that business has a profound effect on our lives, and we want to leverage that. You know, if you think about it, the price of oil goes up a little bit, and it affects billions of people, not millions of people. Or an airline raises an airfare, and every other airline raises their airfare, and hundreds of thousands of people are affected. And we want to leverage that ability. Salim, the other day, started talking about this metaphor of oranges, and he's a very holy teacher, but he can take a metaphor to the brink of death. But I'm going to use it just a little bit more, because it's not only about the oranges. If we're successful in changing the culture of business, when Salim's wife comes up to pay for the oranges in the grocery store, the CEO and the CFO and the COO of Sunkist will fight to see who helps her carry the oranges out of the store. Not because they care about Salim's wife or the oranges, but because they want to sell more oranges. And so if we can change this culture, it affects everybody's life. And it's just an amazing way to leverage the things that happen in our world, and also to borrow Salim's teaching. I mean, the real reason is that if we can teach business how to act in this way, then whether they know it or not, but ideally they'll know, we can teach business to serve other people. So that's the real reason, and that's why it's such a good fit. And so what do we do and how do we do it? We provide traditional business services, and people are paying us for it. The company's going very well. And there are quite a few people here who work for EBO, serving people in business. And there are quite a few of our clients here. So if you really want to know if what we do is worth anything, you can talk to our clients. We do business and executive coaching. And we coach everybody. We coach realtors, investment people. We coach people who are interior designers. It doesn't matter what you do. I had one conversation by phone with a sailor, a woman in the U.S. Navy, who was having relationship problems, stationed on a boat in the Persian Gulf. So, you know, maybe you wonder, what the hell are they doing? Are we trying to make these sailors better military people? No. See, if we can help her understand how to take care of people, I'm so not good at this, then maybe one day they'll just turn those boats around and bring them home. And you know, the reason is simple. It doesn't matter what you do, because we're not selling you how. We don't have to be realtors or lawyers or investment people or designers. We're selling you why. And the why is the same for everybody. So it doesn't matter what you do. Geshe-la talks about the coming up with the short version of the mission for Andean to make money selling jewelry. See, if we'd been around in those days, Andean could have gotten to $250 million faster, and we would have had him as a teacher sooner. But so we're selling why, and we can help people in any business. So we do coaching. And Chukila is our newest coach, now coaching people on three different continents. And Ron Port is in the back somewhere, who was also one of our coaches. And Kimberly, who was wearing so many hats this weekend, was our very first coach. And so we offer consulting. In coaching, we help you learn what to do. In consulting, we give you the answers, and then you can go ahead with what we have to share. John Roadhouse, who's home in Chicago, is now rolling out our mediation program, mediation based on the Diamond Cutter. And what's different about it? It means that everybody approaches mediation with the understanding that if everybody gets taken care of, if everybody gets their needs met, not just me looking out for myself, then everybody will always get their needs met. So John Roadhouse and one other person will be rolling out mediation. In New York, Geshe-la announced business networks that we would be starting. And then Candy, my wife, and the vice president of EBI was kind enough to come up with three distinct ideas we will use. We have 16 diamond cutter study groups meeting around the world, and we're going to start building on those to have a major business network in each of those cities around the world. Places where people can go to talk to other people doing business in this way. If we can figure out how, we're going to start an electronic bulletin board because we communicate with thousands of people every week via our website and email who want to understand how to apply this stuff. And then last thing, we're going to start a certification program so companies can be certified to make a statement about how they're conducting business. And so companies who want to do business with Diamond Cutter-like companies can find companies who do that. We do workshops, and there's a real opportunity here on September 29th. We charge for our workshops, just like other companies do. On September 29th, though, as part of Diamond Mountain, we're offering our full-day workshop at no cost, just like other Diamond Mountain offerings. And what's really unique about it is there will be five of us instructing instead of one. So if you would like to be doused in Diamond Cutter Business Worldview, that's a great place and a great time to do it. We have workshops coming up in New York City at the end of October. We've taught people all over the world this year. The ministers from the new government of Spain, 2 weeks after the explosion on the railroad in Spain, were in our audience. We have business partnerships coming up in Amsterdam, where CEOs will gather next summer to hear Geshe-la talk about business. And part of our trip to Asia this year in February or March includes now, we think, a trip to Shanghai, to mainland China, and to bring EBI to Asia. You can download Geshe-la's business talks from our website. They're free. We're asking people to make a contribution, and the contributions go solely to help pay for this trip to Asia. So this is what we're doing. This is how we do it. The business part of EBI is really taking off. Real clients in real companies with names you would all recognize. And if we can change enough of them, the entire business culture starts to shift, and everything shifts. So thank you. In New York, you know, we send out a note and say we want to do a business talk. And people show up and they pay their money to sponsor it. So one of them was sponsored by James Conner, who's sitting modestly there, and Floss Barber, who is sitting here. The other was sponsored by a hair care company. And they said if you don't stop talking about shampoo and conditioner, they're going to buy all the mint chip ice cream in Bowie.
You will get a break. I just want to, James Conner, by the way, is in charge of the Paid Institute for Peace Education, which is another group that we run. They are working on educating people based on the ancient teachings in methods of bringing peace to our world. So if you're interested in that, they've given some very successful seminars, hundreds and hundreds of people have come. Their materials have been translated into Hebrew and presented in Israel to hundreds and hundreds of people there. So it's sort of a very exciting energy is going on. So if you're interested in that subject, talk to James during the break. We will take a break now. If you didn't get a chance to say hi, and like if you're leaving today or something, please come up and say hi. And if you're going to be around for a while, maybe you wait till next week or something, okay? All right. Here we go. Okay, we'll start. So we did the pen thing, right? And we established that it wasn't coming from itself. Pen-ness must be coming from me, right? So in a way, I'm creating the pen, okay? I'm making that thing a pen. So can I just wish it was a platinum? You see, if I'm creating it, if it's coming from me, this is called prayer in the old days, right? I wish it was platinum. No, and I got disappointed when I was a child, frankly. And you did too, and then you got over it, and then you... But there started a dissonance. There started a nangyal. There started this problem in your mind. You know, why do they pray if it doesn't work? You see, I mean, you got a problem with that. And then you let it go after a while. You see, you let it go after a while. You learn to live with it. Mom still took you to church. They still told you to get down and pray. But they didn't. Nothing happened from it. And then you learn to live with that, you know. And then after a while, when you grow up, you got 20, 25, somebody died. You saw a child die. You saw someone get in a very bad accident. And then you're asking yourself, why? How can this happen? They taught me that the world was made by a person. You know, they taught me that the world was made by a person. And they taught me that this person is a very nice person. So why do people die? And why do people get hurt? And even if it is that they did something bad, why would children get hurt? You see, they haven't had time to do anything bad yet. You see what I mean? And then there started this dissonance. I call it dissonance. It's this question, which brought you here? Which brought me here? You know, my aunt died. I prayed for her, then she died. So what makes the world? You see what I mean? In other words, I think there's this very basic problem with the whole presentation that the world was made by a kind person. And then there's cancer and there's AIDS and you have to die and you're gonna lose everything you ever worked for. You know? And deep down inside, people aren't satisfied with that. There's a problem with that. So then they stop going to church or they stop, you know, they go to a church and the guy says, the world was made by this nice person, he's compassionate, and then there's AIDS and there's war and there's death and even little kids die terrible deaths. And then in your heart something changes. You see, you back off a little bit. You know, I suggest that on this third point, where does the world come from? You know, where does suffering come from? Why do people die? Why do good people get hurt? You know, why do children die in fiery accidents? You know, what? I suggest that might have a lot to do with the breakdown, you see, of that. So we're going to present another idea of where things come from, okay? And this is a thing called world seeds, okay? And the King Melinda, in your reading, you can read it later, okay? But King Melinda says, oh, Nagasena, why is it some people are fat, some people are skinny, some people are tall, some people are short, some people are stupid, some people are smart? You know, why is that? Some people are healthy, some people are sick. Why is that? You know, and then Melinda says, I mean, Nagasena, it's really cool. If you read it, he says, come on, King, why doesn't corn and watermelon and tomatoes taste the same? You know, why does corn taste different from watermelon and tomatoes? And the king says, well, seeds, different seeds, you know. He says, there you go. You know. Okay, it's a very beautiful conversation. It's a very beautiful conversation. The reason you see a pen is a seed in your mind. There's a seed in your mind. And the reason the dog sees something to chew on is a different seed in their mind. Okay? It's coming from their mind. Okay? And seed is the crucial point. Okay? There's a seed in your mind. We call karmic seed. Okay? Karmic seed. How was that seed planted? I'll show you. This is a pen seed. Okay? This is a pen seed. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Giving a pen. The mind is like a video recorder. Every image is recorded. Everything. Billions of images. 65 per second. They call finger snap in the scriptures. Single tapa. Say single. Tapa. In one single tapa, 65 seeds are planted in your mind. So figure it out for their whole life. I don't know. And they stay in your mind. And then they float back up. Okay? If you have been kind, if you have given things to other people, then they will come back to you. Through the mind. You see? As images in the mind. And you say, oh, that sounds cool, but I'm saying no. We made $250 million company a year on that. You know, it's not some pie in the sky thing. It's not be nice to your neighbor thing. It works. It's for real. It changes your bone in my foot. I straightened the bone in my foot. The bone changed. The bone was like that. The bone is like that now. Okay? You change. You know how to change reality. You do the matrix thing. And it's very cool. You just plant the right seeds. And then you sit back and relax, and things happen. I mean, unbelievable stuff happens. You know? I don't know if Dalai is just close to Tucson. You know? No, I mean, okay. No, you get used to it, right? You live among miracles. Especially those of you in ACI worldview thing. You're like having miracles happen so frequently you don't even notice anymore. Didn't you know he's got 400 cities he could go to? You know? And he shows up in Vancouver, it's like 20,000 people come? Why is he coming to Tucson for 2,000 people? You know, I mean, is it just an accident? You know, it's seeds. You're planting seeds. And then sit back and watch the seeds grow. It's like, anything you want to happen, body, or money, family, you looking for Mr. or Mrs. Perfect, plant a seed. What's that seed? Do you know? You should know. We're going to write a book about it because there's like 300 million people that want that book. No, you just very strictly respect other people's relationships. Okay? Very strictly respect other people's relationships. And then you can have the high school cheerleader that you couldn't get in high school. No, I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Strictly respect other people's relationships. Every time you meet the husband or the wife, mentally you pretend the wife or the husband is standing there next to them. And you never say anything or do anything that you wouldn't do if the husband or the wife was standing there next to them. And that's the karma, you see. And everything has a karma. Everything has a karma. So, on this point, our culture has traditionally been very strong. Why? Moses. Okay? 1300 BC, 800 years before Christ. You know, Moses gets up and says, you don't want to see violence? You know, tatsanida vairachyaga. You want to see violence stop in your world? From the Yoga Sutra, right? Stop being violent to people. Don't kill people. You know, and it sounds to us, you grew up with it. You own it. It's part of your hardwired in your brain. You were taught not to kill, right? But that is such an incredible achievement. The Ten Commandments is such an incredible... it's like the invention of the wheel or a fire. It's like he's a real Shingde Soje. He's a real bringer of the horse of wood, which is why it's on the title of your thing. You know, someone who could teach people the best way to get stuff is not to take it away from other people. The best way to be healthy is to respect life. Don't kill anything. You know, the best way to have a nice boy or girl, don't commit adultery. You see, he invented this 800 years before Lord Buddha. And then this weird thing, you know, this tribe comes out of Egypt. They got there 1600 BC. Okay? And then they come back up through the desert and they come to Jerusalem. And then they meet the Greeks. And the Greeks are like turned on. And the Greeks translate their stuff into Greek. And then it gets translated into Romans, because the Romans are just the copycats of the Greeks, okay? They couldn't do anything original. They just copied whatever the Greeks did, okay? So you get this moral code coming into Roman culture, spreads to Europe, spreads to America, spreads to the West. This is why you think it's wrong not to kill people. But they left out the emptiness part, okay? Like, they're just telling you don't kill people. They're just telling you don't steal things. But they're not telling you that's where your world comes from. How you treat other people. You see? They left out that part. That's the part that Melinda should have brought back. You know? Melinda didn't get it here. We didn't get it along with the Ten Commandments. Ten Commandments is how you make good seeds. But I think it's a little weak on the thing that creates your world. You see? Did Jesus not understand that? Is that my stick or your stick? My stick. He heals this guy, nobleman's son. It's called the parable of the nobleman's son. So there's a nobleman whose son is crippled, can't walk. He's been laying on a bed his whole life, okay? So Jesus heals him. He says, I'll show off my Greek again. How's it start? Egere. Soy ton krabeton. Aron ton krabeton soy.
Kai peripete.
I knew it was that. He says, get up and pick up that bed you've been laying on and walk away. Go away. Walk. You know? And he does it. He does it. Right? The guy stands up, picks up his bed, walks away. You know? And then later, how do you say later?
Metatauta.
Later on, Kyriske, Aton, Hayesus, and Hiero, Ento Hiero. So later Jesus findeth him in the temple and said to him, Legon Aton, Ide, Hugeis Giganus. Look, you're 100%. You're back to 100%. You know. Then he says, Mekete Hamartine. But don't collect any more bad seeds. Because, Hina, if you do, something worse will come to you. You see? So he just healed this guy. He just got him to stand up. And what's the first thing he says to him? Don't screw up again. You know? Don't make any more bad karma. Mekete hamartine means give up. Stop doing bad stuff. He doesn't say, go to the church and pray to some guy. You know? He doesn't say that. He says, I cured you. You're okay now, but if you don't change your behavior, what seeds you're planting, Kiran, a worse thing will come to you. You know, a worse thing will come to you. You see? He doesn't say, oh, don't worry, whatever you do, I'll just heal you again. You know, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say, you know, go pray in the temple to God or something and everything will be okay. He doesn't say that. He says, you're walking again now, but if you screw up again, it's worse stuff will come to you. Get it? Like, if you hurt other people, worse stuff will come to you. It's very clear. Like, Jesus got it. You know? Your reality. The condition of your body. How yoga works on you or doesn't work on you. Right? We talked about it in the yoga class. Whether yoga works on you or not has nothing to do with the pose. Has nothing to do with the channels. Has nothing to do with the chakras. Has nothing to do with anything. Except, did you take care of somebody else? Did you take care? Did you plant the right seeds in your mind? Okay, so that part, Jesus was clear, but somehow it got lost, I think. And I suggest, in your culture, if you don't have a strong teaching, your reality is created by how you treat other people. That's all. 100%. 100%. Your reality is 100% created by how you treat other people. I suggest, if your religion's not telling you that, if your culture's not telling you that, if you don't believe it as an individual, you won't be happy. And the culture won't work out. And the religion will start to, churches will start to fold. Okay? Your reality is created by how you follow the Ten Commandments. You see? They didn't tell us that in church. That's all. I mean, if we just add a little stuff, then I think everything would be viable again. You see, I mean, then the rest is cool. All that incense and all those crosses and the beautiful sculptures and the stained glass windows and the churches. I mean, they're fantastic. Everything is good. Just tell people, don't be nice because we told you to be nice. Be nice because that's what creates your reality. And if you're not nice, kiren saiti genete. A worse stuff will come to you. You see, that's all. We're going to talk a little bit about Sky Fathers, okay? You ready? You want to do that?
I think we don't have time.
We don't. You want to do that? Yeah, okay, we'll skip that one. Anyway, don't blame it on Sky Father, okay? Sky Father, okay? No. In Latin, what is Sky Father? Jupiter. Jupiter. Sanskrit is dew, and pitter means father. So Jupiter is Sky Father, okay? And then they stole it as everything else from whom? The Greeks, who it was Zeus in their days, standing up on Mount Olympus somewhere with his big white beard, right? And then in the Bible, in the New Testament, it's who? Ha pater ha theos. Ha theos ha pater. Ha pater ha theos. Theo pater. You see? Jupiter. It's Zeus. It's all the same thing. You see? It's all the same thing. Theos comes from Sanskrit deva. Deva. Over there. Meaning God. And it meant a bright thing. And it meant the sky. And then pater comes from a verb, a pa, to protect. Like Dharmapala, protector. And pater is the protector. And it comes into English as father or pastor. Okay, and so don't blame things on Jupiter. You see, don't blame things. You see, they threw it in because people related to it from Egypt. Sun god, you know what I mean? Like, people related to it. What caused my cancer? Jupiter. Theo, ha pater, ha theos. You know, makes people feel comfortable. There's a guy, he takes care of everything. You got cancer, don't worry. You know, and that's just it. That idea doesn't help people. I mean, you can't hold that idea and hold the idea that you're responsible for your world. You can't hold both of them. You can't hold both of those ideas at the same time. That's why people are having trouble with our religions. With our religions. Because they're teaching you two things that don't sync. They don't sync. On one hand, you tell somebody, there's this guy, Jupiter, Ha Pater Ha Theos, God the Father. He's making everything. And then on the other hand, you say, everything is your karma. Everything. If you don't want a worse thing to happen to you, treat other people well. That's Jesus talking, right? So people have this, they get uncomfortable. For my whole life, you're uncomfortable. Well, who's in charge of this show? Is it me or is it Ha Pater? You know, which one is it? Just tell me straight. You know, and then they're trying to sell you both at the same time. And you're saying, well, make up your mind. And it's the same problem in many faiths. They're trying to sell you, oh, it's this guy who's in charge. But you have to be a good person. And what I suggest is, ultimately, as people, as individuals, as religions, as countries, as planets, we can't be really happy until we take responsibility ourselves. Okay, you meet somebody you don't like? Who's responsible? Is it Ha Pater Ha Theos, Jupiter? No, I mean, is he just there having a bad day? And sent you some money? Or did you? Or is it more logical to say you have hurt someone before? Which is more logical? You can't hold both. I propose you can't hold both. And it makes us nuts to try to hold both. It makes you uncomfortable. And then you stop going to church. Because they try to sell you two things that don't clip. You see? Now we got this big new idea coming in. Okay? It's a big new idea hitting our culture. You know? You're responsible for every bad thing that ever happened to you. It's very uncomfortable. It's not at all what they told you. You know? It's very uncomfortable. It's not science, it's not electromagnetic forces, it's not viruses, it's not bacteria, it's not anything but what you did to other people, period. You can dump science out with Ha Pater, Ha Theos, okay? I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding. Take control of your life. Science gives you a pill and says maybe it'll work, maybe it won't. Penicillin worked last decade, doesn't work this decade. Why? Why? It's not coming from the penicillin. It's not, where is that thing? It's not coming from the penicillin. Okay? You make the penicillin work. Why? You take care of other people or you don't. This is the idea, you see? You get this idea, you can make things happen. You don't get it, you're like out of control. You get cancer, you can't stop it. You can't control your life. Okay? This one you can control even up to death. Okay? This and this are the same. Okay? This and this are the same. No different. No different. I see this as a pen. The dog sees this as something to chew on. I see this as flesh and bone. But if I changed how I treat other people, if I took care of other people, if I really, like if I built a yoga studio, that was, and if my intention was, I want to take care of people. I just want to take care of people. I have to run a business, it has a business side to it. We have to pay for the wood, we have to pay for the building, the air conditioning costs something. But in my heart, the reason I built this yoga studio, I want to help people, you see? If you have this strong intention, you will see this change into light. You see? Because they're the same thing, get it? They're both empty. They don't come from their side. They come from your side. It's so cool. You can change anything. Last thing. Okay. I said, the first night we said, well, if this stuff works, how come we don't see light people walking around on 4th Avenue here? You know? No, sometimes I feel like a dog talking to other dogs. No, sometimes I feel like that. I go, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, and now I'm like, no. You can use this thing to communicate with other dogs 1,000 miles away. And they're like, whoa, whoa. And they're like, because you hold it up and they just see something to chew on. You see? I don't... And you speak, right? You understand dog language. I understand dog language. Now, whoa, whoa. This is a thing. What is this? Tell me what you want. What should I show? But there's another way to look at this thing. You see, if you had different karma, you could see this thing in a way, and you could write letters to your dog friends in other states. And they're like, no. Then they're like, you keep getting this thing from them. It's something to chew on. You see, I know you see it that way, but that's just a seed in your mind. There are beings who can use this for other things. No. No. I never saw that. I never saw that. Okay? So don't tell me you didn't see light people. Okay? Don't tell me that. Think hard. Think hard. Why didn't we see light people? Are there no light people? Okay? You tell me. I mean, you think about it. Take it home. My Lama, Holy Ken Rinpoche, used to say, cook it. Okay? I think we stop there. You got to be the next Shingon Sojas, okay? What's that mean? You got to take the fire and introduce it to people, right? They'll say, what's that for? It feels bad. No, no, you can cook bananas. You know, I said, you know. You have to explain. No, and the first people to come with the new ideas are often rejected. They are often hassled. Sometimes they nail you up. Okay? Okay? No, really. Bringing new ideas, truly new ideas, that can save people's lives, right, into a world. That's what this whole Greek stuff is about. India, blah, blah, blah. Okay? To really bring fire into your world. It's a hard thing. You know, it's new. It's so new. Telling people they don't have to die. Telling people cancer has a cause you can fix it mentally. You can fix the bone in your foot. You can make $250 million, you know. It's so hard for us to understand because we're like dogs. You know? No, it's something like trying to explain to a dog how to use this thing. And you have to... Personally, you have to struggle to master those three ideals. And then you have to try to bring it into your world. And you will meet with a lot of... It's weird, you know. You really introduce a new idea. you get a big reaction sometimes. You know, like the more powerful the idea is, the bigger reaction can come back. And you just have to stay cool. You know, this Jesus is telling his apostles, right? You're going to get burned, whipped, slaughtered, thrown to lions. Don't worry. You know, no, it's like, that's how new ideas come into the world hard. The birth is hard. Mothers can tell you here. Birth is hard. New ideas, hard. But God, it would be so beautiful. Don't get rid of science. Don't get rid of the churches and synagogues. You know, don't get rid of big business. Just change it. You see? Let it be. They're beautiful. They can be beautiful. Big business, churches, synagogues, science itself. You know, just change it. Bring this new way. Bring this new way of seeing things, right? And there would be, what would happen if those institutions became enlightened? You know, enlightened business institute. What would happen? What would happen if, like, a big business, Chevrolet, Ford, Toyota, they're like, they're having a board meeting. I've been there. Board meeting. And everybody's like trying to look good, you know? You wear your best suit that day, you know? And they say, how are we going to sell more? How are we going to boost our stock price? Then what are they going to say? What's a guy going to say? You're up there in the board meeting. You've had Gary Hirsch's coaching. What are you going to propose? Give away cars to poor people in the third world. We got to outdo Chevrolet. Chevrolet gave away 10,000 units last year. Let's do 20,000. Right. Boost the stock price. Got it? Right. Let's do it. And you laugh. You smile. But that's the only way to raise your stock price. And I'm talking from quarter billion. Not some stupid, you know, pie in the sky. It works. It really works. Give. You know? Be generous. Be kind. Take care of other people. Okay? It's so cool. Think of what our culture could do. We could be the coolest culture in history, right? So, you gotta take this Shingta, okay? Wooden horse. A horse made out of wood? What use would that be? Let me explain it to you. Okay? All right? Last thing. I've asked Winston McCullough. He's still on a secret mission. I don't know how much he wants to tell about it. But I've asked him to share with us some ideas he has about how to introduce these ideas, specifically in a church or a synagogue. You know, like what would be, he's got kind of this path, career path. He's been struggling with these ideas. I have no idea what he's going to say. I just popped it on him. So, Winston, any ideas? Sure.
Thank you. I don't know what I'm going to say either. Let's see. I think about 7 years ago, I did this fun exercise. I went into my closet with my computer and I wrote out reasons why my teacher, Geshe Michael, is an enlightened being, why he's a Buddha. And I've been studying with him for, I think, maybe 2 years at this point, but studying really hard. When I met him, I was really excited, and I appreciated the teaching, so I really worked hard on that. So I had a lot of theory to use, and I wrote down about 20 reasons why my teacher is an enlightened being. And I encourage you to consider doing this exercise. It's fun. Just brainstorm. You know, and then I'm kind of notorious for losing things. So I thought if I print out like 100 copies, and I'm a businessman and I have Dharma projects and stuff, so I have all these folders. So I put like a copy of this in every third folder I have, like in every file cabinet I have. I thought, like, you know, as time passes, I'm going to keep coming across this and it'll be fun to see it. You know, maybe there'll be more reasons, you know, and maybe this will be an ongoing thing, like, to work on. So one of those reasons was that he explained experiences that I had when I was a child as a Christian, you know, like praying to Jesus and reading the Bible, you know, and things happen when you practice any faith with a little bit of effort, you know. But then, like probably millions of people in the United States and other countries, I went to college, and some of the ideas didn't continue to make sense to me, you know, with the religion I grew up with. And, you know, my father is a minister, and I grew up really, like, in a church very much, grew up in the church. And then it took me about, I don't know, 15 years to begin to find out what the answers were. You know, why did those things happen? Like, they were so real, and I knew there was some truth to it, but the old explanation for what was going on in my heart, you know, what the experience was real, but the explanation wasn't clear to me. And I stopped going to church because it didn't make sense to me. You know, like when I was in my 20s, say, you know. And then I met Geshe Michael, and that's, you know, I was really looking for a long time and seeking, and that's a long story. And then he explained it. And after a couple of years of studying with Geshe La, it became clear, you know, it made sense to me. And then the Dharma, the whole worldview, and you know the ACI scene in New York, and more recently in Arizona, just is—it's so fun. Like, and it's like a big Dharma party, you know. And like we've been experiencing that a lot this weekend, I think. And we get a vision of what the world could be like, you know. Like we're all on our best behavior this weekend, and right, you know. And it's and everyone's very sweet and excuse me and can I help you, you know. And you know, and what if, you know, what if we did realize that the world that we live in is our responsibility? And so what if we could be on our best behavior more frequently, you know? And then it starts to work like that, and it gets fun, and it gets exciting. But then you think, you know, what about all the other 20-year-olds who are, you know, like, I don't know, at U of A or... you know, Oregon State University, I don't know. You know, what about all them? There must be, and then I start looking at surveys on the web and stuff, and 95% of Americans believe in God, but like fewer and fewer people are going to the mainline churches, you know, because they don't, it doesn't really make sense to them. All the stuff they learned in Sunday school doesn't make sense to them. And I have a feeling that maybe a fair number of them, like, it's really important to them. And maybe they're really have this, like, earnest seeking, you know, for truth. And how, like, they read the words of Jesus and they cry because it's so beautiful and they want to be like that, you know. But then some of the pieces don't fit together. And then it occurs to us that it's not fair for us to just have this Dharma party ourselves. Like, we're all having this Dharma party this weekend, and it's really sweet and fun. But it's not fair for us. It's good to do this, but it's not fair for us only to do that, because we're just a small group of people, and there's, like, millions, billions of people out there. A third of the human population is Christian. It's by far the biggest religion in the world, you know. But in the United States, they don't really go to church, or many of them don't, you know. Because they're not sure how it works, you know. So we have this project called Star in the East. And there's a verse in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 2, verse 2, which says, this is the three wise ones, you know, coming from the East, following the star to see Jesus' birth. And it says, we've seen his star in the East and have come to worship him. And so it's a connection of the spiritual path of the East, including our Indian and Tibetan Buddhism, with the religious ideas of the West, Judeo-Christianity especially. And so we have a, you know, a very long-term vision that it's very important that we share the worldview ideas. The vision, the third of the three principal paths, right? Yang Tak Pe Tawa, right? Correct worldview. How karma and emptiness work together. And that we bring also some of the methods of practice of our Tibetan Buddhist lineage, things about how to meditate, how to watch our mind throughout the day, you know, how to live kindly to others on an hour-by-hour basis, and why it makes sense to do that. So some of these ideas, to share them with our Christian brothers and sisters, not to make them Buddhists, but so that they can be better Christians, you know, and so that they can reach heaven, you know, like by practicing the red words in the Bible, you know, the teachings of their Lord, You know, so that's basically, that's one way of saying, you know, that's what Star in the East is. Yeah, all right. Confirmation system. So you could say Jesus taught us what to do. You know, Jesus taught us what to do. And in Buddhism, we've learned how to do it. You know, methods to practice, like exchanging self and others, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And Buddhism also teaches why to do it. You know, why we must love God with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourself. You know. And even if you get into sort of what's happening in the Christian arena these days, like in our time, this decade, a lot of Christian leaders are embracing, you know, other ideas. Like they have a very ecumenical, sort of open-minded perspective. And they're looking to help Christians to define God, you know, in a broader sense, you know, so that they can believe in God, and so that they can believe in Jesus. And what would it, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we could bring millions of people to like a deeper faith in Jesus, so they could practice what he teaches? And if karma and emptiness is true, you know, what would happen in our world if people started practicing what Jesus taught them? You know, if they practice what their Lama taught them, their master, you know, what would happen in this world? And so most of the people out there who are spiritual seekers are not going to become Buddhists. They're going to stay within their own faith tradition. And we just feel like maybe we have a little bit that we can share with them, you know, to help them do that successfully. So that, you know, that's basically what Star in the East is. It's a very long-term project. I would say it's in the beginning of development. And so I don't have a lot of specific, you know, concrete things to share, more just sort of the vision of what it is. So this weekend was Geshe La's perfect teachings were sort of an introduction to us in terms of the worldview and the three principal paths and the historic connections. So I would say just if maybe others, you know, who are here had childhoods like Andrea and I had, my wife and I, you know, where we're Christians, and we still feel like we're Christians. And we just understand, it's like how karma works, how yoga works, how Christianity works, you know? And we just want to get to heaven like everybody else does, you see? So if you have that, if you're one of the people, you know, who has that background or that seed in your mind, keep in touch, you know? What is it? Semla Jakshu, is that?
Yeah,
you know, keep it in mind. You know, keep this idea in mind. We don't have five steps to accomplish in October. You know, we have a lot to do over the next decades, and we're getting it started now. So I would say just keep your antenna out and be in touch with the Diamond Mountain website and the other places where we publish these things, and eventually we'll get a network built so we can share ideas and find out who's interested in being involved in Project 111. Okay, like that. So, yeah, that's all. And Geshe La, thank you again for perfect teachings. We love you a lot.
I'm supposed to pitch dinner. Please come to dinner if you like. It's a fundraiser for Diamond Mountain, but it's mainly just an excuse to eat again. which I appreciate, because... But also, it's time to thank all the people who helped. So I have a proposal. Like, I'll name a few people, and then two of them are going to name some more people. And then at the end, we just give them one huge applause, okay? Because otherwise we won't get to dinner. Okay. So most important is, I think, Jason and Janice. So if you don't mind to stand up. We're going to clap for you. Thank you for such a beautiful place. And beautiful people. They're so kind to us. And also, if these guys messed up anything, you let me know. No, I've learned to say that. And no, if there's any messes, you let me know. Okay. Gail's crew, who organized this whole event here, come. She's going to announce a few people. We'll embarrass you thoroughly.
This year we have an exceptional list of people who helped put King Melinda together. The first ones I'd like to thank are Geshe-la and Christy. We, of course, could never have any of these teachings without them. Yeah. I have a long list. We've had so many people help with King Melinda this year, and so I'll just start at the top. And I'm not. So on sound, we had Tim and Bill. Master videographer, Benjamin Warden. Registrar David Stump and Andrea Lemon. And Susan Stump as assistant and my wonderful sounding board. Allison Day, who rescued us in the child care by going out and getting things for the kids to play with, and many other bits and pieces of support. Her daughter, Calla, and Kat's two sons, Grail and Zelly, for doing child care. Tassie Klass, Yat Peng, Jackie Fisher, Eric Brinkman, Evan Obershaw, Ness Chu, Sean Pfister, Lori Harrington, Stan Ramanzwiski, did I say that right? Betts Greer, Laura Yeager, Mickey Dulas, Tassie Guthrie, Earl Burney, Ileana Morris, Venerable Ellie, Mercedes, and all of Kimberly's crew. And I hope I haven't forgotten anybody. Thank you.
We forgot to do this at the end of the yoga series teachings for, first of all, Kimberly Vinoff, who put everything together and organized the whole thing. Maybe Kimberly could come up and let us know who else in the YSI that we need to thank. I know a lot of other people were here helping her too. This is a surprise attack. No problem. Okay, so just very quickly, first the work-study staff, Lama Brian Smith, Mirabai Shani, Alistair, her partner, and David Fishman, David and Brandy, his partner. Please stand. Please stand. Yes, please stand. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Alistair, yeah. Okay. They really operate everything. Of course, Jason and Janice. I mean, very holy beings. Thank you so much. And please stay. Please stay with the close to us. Please stay. Yeah. Let's see, all of the work study crew, I think it'd be best, and please don't be shy, it'll help us. I request, please, if you're work study, to please stand up. And Kelly Roadhouse has been my reading my mind and like my right hand. Amazing. Thank you so much. Yeah. Ellie, yeah. Amazing. And Hunter, her son. Yeah. Ellie La is just like constant advisor. Constant advisor. Stand. Rob did all the grading. Please stand. Benjamin, master videographer. I know that you're in here. Eric was on hand as work study. Douglas, Mercedes, teaching. Please stand. Stand, Will. Will, where are you? Stand, Will Duncan, teaching. Yay. Zari, teaching. Right. Yeah, we got him. You love him. I know you love him. We love him. Yay. Sorry. All of the people who assisted, please stand. I got so many compliments on that. Oh, Andriana, you guys, come on. Andriana, Rebecca. Yay, bookstore. Rebecca. Where's Zachary? All of these work study people that don't stand up. Zach, I know you're in here.
He's over here.
Okay, Zachary. He's there, down there. Oh, no. Right. Amazing. Thank you. Everyone who did yoga assists, very, very beautiful and helpful. Thank you so much. I got so many comments on that. We have very special guests, Michael and Nicole. Thank you for joining us. And teaching us. Carl G, you were a great help to us. Thank you. And really, everybody else. Who am I forgetting? Probably a lot of people, and I apologize for that. And my husband. Yeah.
Last thing. They were nice when the readings didn't get done till like 2 a.m. and people went out and Xeroxed them, and like extraordinary. And the main two are Venerable Chukila and Venerable Ellie. Okay.
Dedicate the good karma, you ready?
Okay, we'll do mandala. Ready? Nobody ever talks about the stuff we just talked about. And extraordinary seeds have been planted. Amazing things will happen. You can say, I was there. Okay? It'll be like that. So rejoice, be happy. You all did a good job. You all did an amazing job, and incredible energy here, incredible karma, it's incredible space, and incredible energy. So the best way to keep the karma is what?
Get away.
Okay, here we go. This is the slow mandala, if you know. Sanshi. Mm-hmm. Idam Guru Rana Manala Niyadayami. It's got to be Mercedes. Where's Mercedes?
By the goodness of what I have just done, may all beings complete the collection of merit and wisdom, and thus gain the two ultimate bodies that merit and wisdom made.